Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. And on this week's show, we'll be talking about knitting for the visually impaired. We're going to meet Anna and Crystal, who are two knitters who run a blog and have some other useful information that you might want to learn about.
Before we get started, the IRS asked us to pass along some information about the services they provide for the disabled now that it's tax season.
Video includes a narrator who uses American Sign Language while talking with a life-size smartphone. Internal Revenue Service logo is displayed on the face of the smartphone.
Iris, I need help with my taxes. Where can I find information for people with disabilities like me?
Let me see. There are many good sources of information at the IRS.gov website.
Really? Where?
Go to www.irs.gov and select the accessibility link. You can download hundreds of accessible tax products. Or you can link to videos in American Sign Language. And there is assistance for veterans with disabilities, free tax assistance, information about tax benefits, and much more. There are tax products available for download in Braille and text formats, large print, and accessible PDFs. You can also view publications and instructions in HTML. And every web page has a link to contact the IRS.
Words appear. Visit www.irs.gov.
Now for this week's tips, which come from Anna and Crystal.
A lot of times I read articles about maybe Mrs. So-and-so who knitted 70 caps for the preemie center at the local hospital, and she's 80 years old and she's been doing it her whole life. She's losing her vision, but as long as she can see, she can knit. Whenever I read those articles, I want to scream because I think even after she stops seeing, she can still knit, and she needs to know that. And I think other people need to know that as they get older, they don't have to give up their hobbies, and knitting and crocheting and spinning are hobbies they do not need to give up.
And that's a great tip because, you know, some of us are used to being blind from when we were young kids, like myself and many other people. But sometimes, you know, especially as we get older, our vision begins to deteriorate and we can't do things as easily as we once used to. But, you know, basically what Anna's trying to tell us is that, you know, just because your eyesight may be degrading a little bit, you can still do some of these things. It might take a little bit different style, a little bit more training, but you don't need your eyes to do a lot of things.
Right. And this advice isn't limited to knitting. It goes for lots and lots of things. We've heard over the last year plus that we've been doing this show from lots of visually impaired people who do things you might not expect visually impaired people to be able to do.
Bowling, music, canoeing, skiing, all kinds of things, right?
Absolutely. I've been living with Pete for almost 30 years, and I finally figured out that he can probably do pretty much anything besides drive the car and work power tools. We don't really think that's safe. But just because he can't see doesn't stop either one of us from assuming he can do whatever he sets his mind to.
So don't get discouraged if your eyes are not acting as good as they did when you were younger and things were a little bit harder to see. There are ways of doing things, and people do them. And we've seen lots of examples on many of these Viewpoint shows.
And Crystal seems to agree with us.
Just go for it. If you want to do anything as a blind person, I mean, you know, you don't know until you try.
Good attitude. As our son's kindergarten teacher used to tell their class, never say you can't, always say you'll try. And she tried to instill that can-do attitude into her students, even though they were sighted and didn't have any particular visual issues.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Anna and Crystal.
Well, my name is Anna. I live in Central California. I'm an English teacher and a translator and an avid knitter. I learned to knit when I was about 5 years old, and I've been doing it off and on for most of my life.
I'm Crystal. I live in Western North Carolina. I'm a stay-at-home mother to my son, who is 15 months old. We live here with my husband. We have a little dog and two Angora rabbits. I learned to knit about 5 years ago, and I learned how to spin last year. And that's what the rabbits are for, so I can spin their hair.
So I guess the plan ultimately is she's going to start with a couple of rabbits and end up with a sweater. Anna also goes by the name Access Anna. She maintains a blog on Android accessibility, and she's got plans to pick up a new smartphone with a new version of the Android operating system. We'll be interviewing her for a future episode of Viewpoints about Android accessibility. Well, as you may have gathered, they're both blind.
I lost my sight when I was about 7 years old. I lost most of it between first and second grade. It was a retinal issue, and basically it boils down to a form of retinal detachment. I had light perception for about 2 years after that, and so I was totally blind by about the age of 9 or 10.
And Crystal lost her vision a little bit later in life?
I lost my sight whenever I was 20, about 10 years ago. And it was a genetic condition called von Hippel-Lindau, and we didn't know that I had it until all of a sudden I saw red in my eye. And so obviously that's not a good thing, but within about 2 years from that point, I went totally blind. It causes little bitty tumors called angiomas, and they leak. It's a lot like macular degeneration, the wet kind.
It has to be difficult to make the transition to being blind once you've seen for a while. Certainly as you're younger, the transition is a little bit easier. But I think it also helps when you're younger if you've seen the world and know what things are like by looking at them and have some idea of what the visual world is like. Even once you go blind after that, you have a little bit better concept of the world around you. On the other hand, as we said before, many people lose their sight as they get older, and it's a different kind of transition. First of all, when you're older, you don't make those transitions as easily. You've had more experience in your life and gotten used to doing things in a certain way. So sometimes that transition can be difficult also. But the important thing is to make the transition and to learn how to deal with your new situation as it comes along.
So Anna and Crystal actually met on account of their knitting. They had each joined a Google group called Blind Stitchers, and they met online through that. And then together they decided to jointly set up their own blog. And it turns out they had never actually spoken in person. They had only been sending emails back and forth and working on the blog digitally until we contacted them and said, hey, would you like to be interviewed for Viewpoints? So they finally spoke with each other.
How did you guys get together in the first place?
Well, we met on, there's a Blind Stitchers email list where a lot of blind knitters talk about, you know, the problems we have with knitting and all that, and we met on there.
It's a Google group, and they can search for Blind Stitchers. I think it's blindstitchers@googlegroups.com.
We just never talked before last night.
I hope you like each other.
I think we do.
Yes, so far.
So that was great to have introduced them kind of voice to voice, so to speak, via Skype because of the interview for our show.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic will be about actually knitting for a blind person. And so, of course, we had to ask Anna and Crystal how they got into knitting.
My mom is just a fantastic craftswoman. She can cook beautifully and knit beautifully and decorate cakes and crochet. And she made really lovely crochet items. And I wanted to learn to crochet, but I guess that, you know, five, I was not coordinated enough. So we went to knitting and I learned to knit. And so I would make Barbie doll clothes. And I knit for a little while when I was a kid. And then I did a little more knitting when I was in college. And then I forgot all about it, and I picked it up again about 10 years ago. And when I resumed knitting 10 years ago, I realized I was only a very basic knitter. I could make a washcloth, a scarf, and an afghan, you know, just a square rectangle of some sort. And so I started to use the internet and knitting groups to become a much more sophisticated knitter.
You know, it's kind of funny the things we learn when we're young children that we kind of drop through our middle years, high school, college, and as we're going through careers. And then later on in life, we sometimes pick these things up. How many people have taken piano lessons when they were in elementary school and didn't play forever and ever, and then when they were older, just started playing piano or some other musical instrument with their friends in a group or just for fun?
You.
Yeah, well, me, that's true. We have our jazz trio now roaming around town, which is a lot of fun. But for a long time, I did give it up, even though I worked a lot at it when I was younger.
And we also asked Crystal how she got into knitting.
I learned to crochet whenever I was a teenager. My mother enlisted me to help her finish some baby blankets. And then I didn't do too much of it. I made a baby blanket every now and then whenever anybody had a baby. But then about 5 years ago, my sister-in-law was knitting, and I could hear her sitting beside me clicking. And I was like, "Are you knitting?" And she says, "Yeah." And so one thing led to another, and she eventually taught me how to do it. And ever since then, I've knit like crazy.
I guess my mom never enlisted me to help her crochet, which is why I never picked it up. Although I asked her several times if she would teach me. She never did. I love the afghans she makes.
Well, my mom once enlisted me to finish a needlepoint that she was working on because she had developed bursitis or something. And let me tell you, I just don't have the patience for that kind of thing. I sew a lot and I garden and I do some artsy, craftsy things, but I don't have the patience for something as slow going as needlepointing. And that experience just cemented that idea in my mind that I was not going to be a needlepoint. So anyway, we have these two blind, avid knitters that we've been talking to, and we asked, you know, what's different about knitting if you can't see versus if you can see?
One difference my mother comments on is that I hold my work in an odd way, she says, and I'm holding it mostly with the middle ring and pinky fingers so that my index fingers are free to explore what I'm working on. And so she thinks I'm holding it in a very odd way. And I do remember that when she taught me to knit as a sighted child, I was holding it differently. And so I think that's the biggest difference, because obviously I need my hands to manipulate the yarn, but also to examine the work, to keep track of my pattern and so on.
Yeah, I think you feel of it a lot more, and you're slower at first. You know, you have to make sure you know what's going on and pay attention to every single stitch and feel it of a lot to make sure you don't drop stitches. Even sighted people, when they knit, they'll drop a stitch and not notice it. But for us, this, as soon as you notice it, it's easier to fix it if you fix it right away.
That is true. I remember when I came back to knitting, I was extremely slow, and a lot of it was just learning to get to know the texture of different yarns and different fabrics, and learning to identify what's going on the needle just by running my finger over the needle with the stitches without having to refer to the hard copy pattern. And that took a long time. Now I can zip through a sock in no time, but when I first started knitting socks, it would take me months just to get.
And I guess when you're learning anything new, you just have to be a little bit patient. I mean, you'll sometimes be a little bit more slow when you're learning a new task, particularly if, you know, your vision is an issue, you might have to be a little bit extra patient. But once you get over that hurdle, I mean, I think as you'll see as we go on talking to Anna and Crystal, that they do this quite successfully and it isn't really a big problem now. So you need a little bit of practice and patience.
And knitting is a little bit like the proverbial riding a bicycle. You know, if you used to do it, it may take you a little while to figure it out again, but you can. You never really lose what's in your hands. I used to knit a little bit in high school and college, and then I stopped. And, you know, 25, 30 years later, I decided to make myself a scarf. Talk about the easiest possible thing. I got some hairy yarn, and I did the whole thing with the knit stitch. I didn't even do the purl stitch, and it came out okay, but boy, I was really slow getting started. But eventually it came back to me, and so 2 years later I made another scarf, and that's been it.
You have perfect eyesight.
That's right. I can see, but it's slow getting started. You know, you may remember being able to do it quicker, but just be patient and you'll pick it back up.
The other thing I thought was interesting was Anna talking about how she held her stitches and her yarn a little bit differently. You know, when you're visually impaired, you rely a lot on your index finger, which is very sensitive to feel things and the details of things. And, you know, she made great use of that to hold her yarn differently and feel the details of her work. I know I hate wearing gloves in the winter for exactly that reason. You know, I use my sense of touch a lot, and you get to rely on that, and I miss that. So I tend not to wear gloves if I don't have to.
That's dangerous in Rochester. You can freeze your fingers right off.
It gets cold.
So they'd kind of worked out how to actually do the knitting. It turns out there are some special challenges for blind knitters.
I think the biggest thing is people just to admit to themselves that they can do it. Because once you put needles in hand and try it, it's not as hard as it seems.
And also, I don't think people realize how much they don't necessarily need their sight to knit, especially if they've been knitting for a while or crocheting for a while. A lot of it is things they do out of habit. They're probably watching TV while they're knitting and paying a lot more attention to the steamy scene on the screen than to whatever's on the needle. And so I think they need to just get used to feeling their work, touching their work with their fingers. And there's this whole myth that blind people have heightened senses, but a lot of that is just practice. It's a routine drill and practice. So to somebody who is losing their sight, it would be helpful to try to do what they do with their eyes by not looking so much at it. And it helps to use big yarn and big needles, maybe a bulky weight yarn with size 10 or 11 needles, so that things are really easy to feel. And when that becomes comfortable, they can drop down to a medium weight yarn and maybe size 8 needles, and then slowly work their way down to sock yarn and sock needles.
And I think those are some great points. I mean, if you do have use of your eyesight, you tend to use your eyesight, of course, and then you become to rely on it. And even if you don't need your sight for certain tasks, you still are used to using your eyes to do those tasks. So sometimes you may find that you don't need your sight as much as you think you do.
Why, I've been known to walk around the house and not bother turning on the lights because Pete doesn't need them. Why should I bother turning them on?
Good practice for a blackout.
That's right, but I walk into fewer walls when I have them on.
We count rows differently, the way we keep track, because sighted people have these little handy row counter things that they just click and it flips the numbers over every time they do a row. But we have to think of all different ways to keep track of what rows we're on.
Okay, so Crystal, talk about the great row counting methods. That's fantastic.
Okay, the first one the one I love the most, which I don't actually do, but is to get, like, say you've got to count 10 rows, to get 10 pieces of candy and eat one with each row. But that's my favorite one. More practical ones are, you know, there's a scorecard that I use from the American Printing House for the Blind that has little bumps for buttons, and you just press them in every time you go down a row. And you can use safety pins, and there's a bracelet. Anna's designed a pattern for a bracelet with beads that you can use.
Boy, I'm intrigued by the candy eating method to count rows. That could probably be used to count lots of other things, and you can be pretty happy through the day.
You'd be amazed. You can eat the candy without counting.
Well, good point. But I mean, what she's saying is, you know, sometimes you have to find an alternate way of doing a task which someone with sight might do a different way. But there are plenty of alternatives and lots of different choices depending on which one is best suited for you.
In talking to them, it seemed to me that the biggest issue was dealing with instructions and patterns, but they've worked that out too.
Another problem that we have as knitters is that many patterns are presented in graphical form only, and so it's really difficult to scan the pattern because scanners tend to botch the lines. And so that's not a real practical way for us to access those patterns. I sometimes rope my non-knitting friends into reading them to me, and that's always hysterical. And it, you know, line to the left, line to the right, the squiggly thing here and a circle there. And I don't know what that is, you know. Buying pattern books and stitch books is always interesting because I always need to make sure that the pattern is also available as text. So that I can scan it or have someone read it to me.
There are some designers that they publish all their patterns in charts and written text because that's just what they do. Because even some sighted people don't like charts. But then there's some designers who always put everything in charts, no matter what.
And unfortunately, a lot of print magazines, I stopped buying them. When I first came back to knitting, I would buy print magazines all the time because I knew I could scan most of the patterns. And now the trend is really heavily influenced toward chart. Part of my own reason for starting the knitting blog is, aside from sharing information about how to knit and crochet and other things if you're blind, is to make designers and magazine publishers aware of us as a community and to make them hopefully be a little more conscious of making patterns accessible to us.
We've done a little bit of chart translation on the blog, and my sister-in-law has helped out a lot with that. And that, when I contact the designers and I let them know, hey, we need this in written text, a lot of them have come back and said, well, in the future, I will always provide a written text for my chart. So it's small progress, but it's progress.
Not being a knitter myself, I wasn't sure what the charts were and the graphical nature of these things. But apparently these charts are a series of slashes, forward slashes, backslashes, zeros, and other marks like that on a piece of paper to let people know when to do certain stitches on your work that you're performing.
Knit, purl, carry over, drop a stitch, whatever, and that's a lot easier than having to deal with all of these special symbols, because if you try running that through OCR, it's not going to come out meaningful.
Yeah, that's certainly true. But as Anna, or I guess Crystal, pointed out that, you know, often when you contact people who are providing such documentation, if they realize what the problem is, at some point these things are in electronic format. And if you ask them and try to figure out where the original source material comes from, they can often provide you with the original document in some kind of text format or some other format that might be accessible. And I've done this lots for documentation that comes with other products which I bought, where you only get a print document or a print manual and you can't read it. And, you know, if you tell them what the issue is, you can go through their support system, and someone can often dig up an electronic form of the document and send it to you as a one-off type of thing if you agree not to just copy it and send it to other people.
Needless to say, because we're kind of techno geeks, we asked what kind of special apps there were for knitters, and sure enough, there are some.
I have an iPhone, and there's actually some knitting apps for that I've been able to use them. The major one I use is JKnit, and it has an online interface too where you can enter in your pattern, and then it has a row counter built into it, and what happens is every time you click a row, it'll tell you what the pattern is for that row. So it basically follows along the pattern with you and keeps track of your place and does everything you need it to do.
So this knitting app is great for a blinder.
And of course, there are other apps for the Android, and Anna had some suggestions there.
Android has a couple of knitting apps. A few have gotten less accessible as they've been revised, but they had one, and I think it's just called Knits. I'll have to grab my phone and maybe email you what it is called. You type in the name of your project and how many balls of yarn you think you'll need and what size you wanted, and it'll help you calculate how much yarn for the specific size, or if you're going to lengthen the sleeves, how much extra yarn, that sort of thing. It's a yarn calculator.
The one that Anna just described is technically called Knitting Calculator. There's also one called Knit Counter that we found that works for either the Droid or the iPhone.
And as I'm always saying, let Google be your friend. We Googled knitting apps for both Android and iPhone and came up with lots of other applications which you might want to try out.
Now for this week's high-tech item, we'll talk about the blog that they maintain. It's called fingeringyarn, all one word, .wordpress, also all one word, .com.
Well, the actual blog service is quite accessible. There are very few things we cannot do with our screen readers. Most things are quite accessible and they're very screen reader friendly. On the knitting blog, we sometimes post pictures of patterns or of other things. And so we get a little help with that.
Yeah, because you want to make sure the picture's clear and that you're getting what you want up there, you know. But that's really, there's no way to work around that without being able to see, you know.
But beyond that, Crystal and I write most of the posts. sometimes somebody on the Blind Stitchers list will contribute a post, or sometimes they'll say something on list that I think is fantastic, so I'll just ask for permission to move it over to the blog. And lately we've been a little slower about posting, but we think that the blog has lots of great information, lots of practical stuff.
It does. I think we wanted a place where we could just collect everything that we wanted to share, you know, for everybody to use. Like, I mean, obviously the people on the list have always had access to it, but not everyone wants to be involved in a list either.
And the other great thing about the blog is we've gotten feedback from people who just discover our blog as they're Googling around, and they'll say things like, I didn't know the two of you were blind until I read the bio section, and this is great information for everyone. So that's always a nice thing.
So we try to write all the tutorials in a very clear way that has, you know, it's all words, no pictures. Because a lot of tutorials will be like, refer to picture A, move your yarn like it shows in the picture. And that doesn't help.
Lately, we had this great thread on the list. I came across a pattern for a way to make socks. And there's a YouTube video that shows it. And the woman who describes it actually does a great job until she gets to the key step. And then she starts going on about, here's the mother and the daughter and the grandmother. Ignore the grandmother. Now put mother on the horsey. Thank you, mom. And blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, what is that? And
yeah, so we had to, no idea what she's saying.
So we had to get someone to describe what she was doing. And that's very typical, you know, the instructions will be clear to a point, and then they'll say, as like in the picture.
Yeah. There'll be one little tiny sticking point.
So this blog can be a great place for visually impaired folks who like to knit to connect with other visually impaired knitters, get some tips and tricks, and they have lots of information that they share on this site, lots of links to other sites, and you can learn a lot and meet some other people in a similar situation with some similar interests.
And just to give you a feel for some of the stuff they have on their site, their tutorials really are very clear, very step-by-step, totally verbal. There aren't any pictures, so they're perfect for a visually impaired knitter. And they've got various tutorials on learning to crochet, basic knitting stitches, casting on and binding off. I always thought that was the hardest part of knitting, using double pointed needles or circular needles for round items, and even a tutorial on embossing patterns directly from the Braille note. So that would also be very handy. If you missed any of the links above, they're all in the show notes, which you can find on our website at www.viewpointsplus.net. That's it for show number 1214. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about audio description at live theater. If you can't see the action on the stage, audio description fills in the gaps and helps you know what's going on. This week, we'll visit Jiva Theater Center and talk to the people who make it happen there, learn what's involved in creating an audio-described performance, and experience one with us. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.